You want to do your thing?
What thing?
1, 2, 3! Dominate!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Fangs and Fonts. I am Ocean.
I'm Yanara.
I'm Voice.
I'm Roland.
And we're back. It certainly feels like it's been a while.
It has a bit.
It was a good convention.
A convention and time off. Yeah, it was good.
So much time off. I'm on permanent vacation.
Oh, poor dear.
I'm sure you'll make tons of money off of writing.
Eat a dick.
I don't mean that as a personal insult against you. I just mean that it's so hard to make money off of writing.
I know, which is why you can eat a right proper dick.
How's that editing going?
Oh, Christ.
Terribly.
Okay.
You at least make good money off of editing, I hear.
Can you? See, I've debated that.
It's more like an actual profession, which sounds really insulting to particular writers, but you can edit like professional documents for some good money, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah, but I wonder if you were to set up, and I've thought about this, what if I sold my editing skills? At what rate would I have to go to make a decent money? Like, I've seen things where it's like, oh, I'll charge you $1 a page, and so
inside
a 20...
Inside or outside the furry fandom?
This is inside. Every... Outside, you can make much more.
You could make balls.
Yeah, then there's the whole, every time I read your stuff and feel like stabbing myself in the eye, you have to pay $10 extra.
Think of how long it took you to edit
exactly.
Read Rail. And it's then, 24 pages.
That's exactly... Okay, so if I got $24, I certainly took me, even if I said 6 hours, that's $4 an hour.
And
welcome to the creative arts, where you make tons of money.
This is why I have a technical degree and a salary. So,
which brings us to our next point.
We all got back recently from RF, which was fantastic time. Hopefully, maybe we got one or two new people from there. If so, we love you. If you went to the con and heard about us and forgot to add us, we'll forgive you if you're listening now.
So, like, I didn't mention you on every single panel.
It was double mentioned on our panel. Because I had nothing else to say about myself.
This is only our 7th episode. Plenty of people are welcome to
This is episode 8.
Whatever.
I know. I've got something special planned for episode 10. No, I don't. But, yeah, it was a really great time. Got to meet a lot of authors.
You did a lot of socializing. I wouldn't say networking, socializing.
It's the same thing.
Considering the people we were socializing with, networking sounds like an appropriate
thing. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
That's all networking is, after all.
Well, there was a lot of people who we've talked to before, communicated with, even edited stories with, but had never actually met.
And despite what shit writers say, sounds like we actually had a lot of serious conversations.
Which, wherever that audio went, it's inexplicably missing.
The semicolon
missing.
Debate, clearly.
Hey, that was a perfectly in-depth, deep discussion.
It was certainly passionate.
That involved shouting.
And money was starting to change hands, and bets were taken.
I will say, it was really nice to put some faces to some of the names out there.
Oh, yeah.
That was nice. And again, I'm probably one of the shortest people out there.
Understanding some people's motives on Twitter, like, truly, like, meeting them in person and... who they personify themselves as online.
It's entertaining.
That was good.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely great. And the fact that a lot of them were like, oh, yeah, we've heard of your podcast. And you're like...
and you're like, you've listened to our podcast?
And they're like, no, I've only just heard about it. You're like, you should listen to it. But, yeah, it was great. And you did 8 panels?
8 panels.
Tell us about that.
It was long. This is my first con ever doing panels, and... it's a lot different doing actual quote-unquote work at your convention than just running around doing random shit. Because when you're running around doing random shit, you have all the time in the world. When you're actually doing panels, it's suddenly like, hey, I want to watch cartoons for 2 hours. Guess what? You're not. You're waking up, quickly scarfing your cereal, watching one episode of DuckTales, and running off to a panel where you have an audience of 5 people. Because guess what? Everyone else is watching cartoons.
I remember I would wake up in the morning, and I got up early for our room, so around 10. And I'd look at the schedule and be like, that panel's today. I'd like to check that. Oh, that was at 9. Well, nope. And the other one I wanted is 10. Well, I guess I'll wait till 3 to watch the other panel I wanted to be in.
I'm going back
and
to bed.
Why do they put panels at 9 a.m.
Well,
at a
con? And then the thing is like, my panel's like beginning writing for writers or writing for beginners. Holy shit. Anyway.
Those were early in the morning,
early in the morning. Well, one was Thursday night.
I think they're trying to teach the writers you're not going to get very much sleep if you keep this up.
But it was funny because it was like, you had all these relatively okay panels, and then it hit... I think when it really hit was like the How to Write Horror. And despite the fact that that was happening during the first Super Parade, that was packed. And then everyone after that, especially the 18 plus, like I had a couple 18 plus ones where it was standing room only.
Those were hilarious.
And I'm just like, the hell? What's going on?
Do you think our demographic of interests and narratives are possibly skewed in the fandom from this?
Yeah, just a wee bit.
Well, to be fair, like you said, the writing for horror one was full, and it was during the fursuit parade, so...
It was full during the parade. Oh, yeah. That is awesome.
Which was stupendous. But yeah, no, the 18-plus ones definitely get a higher audience. Mm-hmm.
It's because you get to learn 17 different ways.
I was disappointed in the parade because... we didn't actually get to go outside.
You're going to totally pick up that lighter every time you click it.
But the parade, yeah, it was raining. It was raining
crazy. That's why I decided to cancel it. I mean, it was shortened by nearly half, and then...
Well, we only had like 1 or 2 days that didn't rain, right?
Yeah, the first 2 days we were there and the day we were leaving.
RainCon 2013.
Oh boy, it was bad.
So anyway, we all had a lot of fun.
It was good.
I spent most of my money at Contact Caffeine and for Planet.
We love you, Contact
Caffeine.
No wonder
you smell so nice.
Yeah. It's funny. Every time I walked up to Fur Planet, I'm like, okay, this is what I haven't bought yet. Tell me, what should I buy? And then I'd end up spending like $50.
I thought our panel went really well, too. It was
impromptu
to just suddenly show up.
Yanis decided that he was going to go for food, and I had to call Ocean to be on the panel, to which he promptly showed up and... you did a good job.
In all his squinty glory, because he was on his way to look for his glasses with me.
I made the joke on Facebook that I was going in blind both literally and figuratively because didn't have glasses and had nothing prepared.
I missed that.
Well, it still went relatively well.
Mm-hmm. We both were able to take off.
Who's the other guy on there?
I don't know his name. All I know is he's a journalist, and he went, why am I... It was for Writer's Block, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, why am I on this panel for Writer's Block?
And that panel was full.
No. It was someone else.
That panel was full.
I know, which was really bizarre.
Well, a lot of people suffering from writer block. They sit there and go, fuck, now what?
I think we did a good job. Just, you know, keep positive, keep writing.
Well, we got the names of a few good books out there, so. Yeah. It's always kind of, always threw me when people would actually ask me for the names of books that I was actually talking about. Especially during the horror panel where they're like, what's the name of this book with the long heads? And I'm just like... I've listed a bunch of books. I think it's called this. But, yeah, no.
And also, our podcast is Fangs and Fonts. F-O-N-T-S. Not Fonz or
not true
Fongs.
Where you guys got that from.
There was a bunch of people that they'd keep asking what the last word was.
Fangs and Fonz. No.
Hey!
I was thinking Fonz like baby deer, though.
Yeah, that was the other one.
Yeah. Fangs and Fonz. That sounds like a predatory event.
Did you guys learn anything while at the con? I think one of the great things I've heard was at the panel at editing, Kyle Gold said, I'm paraphrasing this horribly, but when you're editing someone's work, you're not turning it into something that you would write. You're looking at making it the best work that they've made.
I liked that point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I learned... Oh. Well, first of all, I learned that Kyle Gold is actually an amazing person in person. When he said my name the first time he shook my hand and actually made the effort to come back after almost leaving the room just to correctly state my name, reshake my hand, and do it all over again.
What did he call you, Carl?
Yeah.
Carl.
And then he comes back and he's like...
Carl!
He comes back and he's like, I called you Carl, didn't I? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm so used to people missaying my name anyway. And he's like, okay, let's do this right. And then actually said it right. And I, you know, and that raises, when someone takes the time to actually do that, mm-hmm. it means they're paying attention to the things around them and what they're doing and how they present themselves. And that was actually really nice. But as far as learning things went, I learned that basically you could have a rubber chicken at the end of The Mist by Stephen King, and the movie would take on an entirely new, creepier message. A floating rubber chicken that talks, mind you. At the very end, after this ending I can't ruin on here, but the depressing ending, and then just having a rubber chicken fly by. Did you learn anything, Roland?
What I learned from RF are that first impressions are important, and that though people may appreciate your body, it's best to keep your clothes on. At least it was said under my terms.
I learned not to go in the hot tub with patient zero here.
Were you? No, yeah, I guess you were.
Yeah, I was.
To be fair, everybody pretty much caught some strain of that.
Yeah.
I actually still want to do the numbers on that.
Well, actually, the one thing I did learn that kind of seems to be helping right now is, ironically enough, from this one's panel, about, you know, one of the things about what makes a story furry, and it's kind of been helping me with one of the things I'm writing right now. So, what makes elves look strange in comparison to furries, or to humans, so what would make a fairy look strange in comparison to a furry, especially when there's so many furry genres out, or creatures out there, so I went to town with that idea. I'm enjoying it so far.
Cool.
I think it was a whole lot of socializing, networking, and it was, again, like I said, fantastic to put some faces to names and add a whole bunch of new people to my random stalkers list. I mean, watch list.
Oh, wait, Shifty Eyes doesn't come across well on an audio podcast.
That's okay. Nope. Neither does my shitting and grin.
I think the only thing that I wanted to do was do the writing competition, which I did go and listen and found out the theme, had an idea, and just had too much fun at the con to actually write anything. So I'm hoping to actually probably write the idea and submit it to the anthology formally. But the theme happened to be cyberpunk.
Hooray!
Which happens to coincide with what we happen to be talking about. See that beautiful segue?
Yeah,
my lungs.
Smooth.
The one lesson I have learned over the number of RS is that I will never have enough free time to write for those writing contests.
I honestly didn't think I would, but I figured I'd give it a shot, and if there was a chance, I'd do it. Like, you only had to write 2 to 5,000, which isn't too hard, but you had less than 48 hours.
You have to write 2 to 5,000 words and then edit it.
Well,
so that's still like 4 hours.
But if us four went in, say, and sat down and said, okay, we're going to write a story, then the second day where they have the panel with the editing, it's easy enough for a group like us to be like, okay, everyone else switch stories, shift to the right, and then have at least two other people that you know their editing style edit your story, and then
it's... Is that what they actually do on day two?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a come and meet beta readers and get your stuff.
We wouldn't even have to show up.
No.
We would just sit in the hotel room and do whoop.
Why would you want to give your editing to someone you don't know, don't trust?
I guess it's part of the social aspect. And
I don't want to socialize if I'm writing for a contest.
Given some of the people that attend those particular meets, I wouldn't want to randomly pass off my editing either.
Yeah, see? There we go.
I'm not going to say it's a bad idea. I think they're trying to encourage the writer's group.
No, it's not a bad idea.
I like
something I would prefer not to.
I was talking to Ash about, because he really wants to have our group meet his group and just have a writer's sit down and write.
Who's in his group that we didn't meet?
Because
I know
him,
there's the four of them
him,
that already
Yanis,
live together.
And then
Manji and Sparf.
That would probably be the group he's referring to.
Well,
and then I said,
that was our
end. Well, no, but actually sit down and write together. Like, do 30 minutes of writing, 10 minutes of talking, 30 minutes of writing, 10 minutes
have
of talking.
Have an actual writing group.
But have our group compete against theirs.
Sounds a little one-sided to me.
Well, we would get an impartial judge.
No, we could just get, like, the audience to judge our story.
Yeah.
That sounds a little one-sided.
There's already the iron author at Anthrocon, where they already give you, write all this and come back tomorrow. And there was already, I think, Yanis and Kyle Gold and one other person. I think it was Fuzzball.
Flash writing. Oh, the flash
writing?
Yeah,
they did their flash writing panel. Yeah.
Which Ash so wants me like to do that. Next year. Which I don't know if I can sit there and... There'd be too many asses in my story and all the other things that you guys hate.
Yeah, but who cares? Because we're not...
Asses.
It's not supposed to be perfect.
As.
That ass was as smooth.
No, you said as is. There's really only one way to hear that.
So, cyberpunk.
What is cyberpunk?
Well, what's punk to begin with? Like, there's steampunk. It's something similar to steampunk and all those other punks.
I think punk. Cyberpunk is the granddaddy of them all.
The granddaddy?
The granddaddy.
I thought steampunk was the granddaddy.
No. No? Steampunk came after cyberpunk.
Steampunk is relatively...
I say no to that.
No, I think it's a relatively new fad.
Jules Verne.
But that was sci-fi.
Steampunk only got coined after the fact. And then they went back and went, oh shit, he already wrote it.
Wait, but what about the first instance of cyberpunk? Did that have a name then?
Ah, fuck.
Yes!
Just because the genre isn't created at the time you write it doesn't mean it's not part of that genre.
Just the fact that, like, sure, it's whatever punk is always sci-fi. Mm-hmm. That is just the inherent nature.
Was the Maltese Falcon known as noir when it first came out, or did it later become noir?
I think it later became noir.
No, that's an excellent point. So anyway,
it's
the starting of the term of punk, something blank punk. Mm-hmm. How's that?
Do you want to give your definition of what a punk story is?
I was just going to read it off the Wikipedia.
Read it off the Wikipedia.
I don't have a computer open.
Why didn't you open your computer?
Because I told you guys I was...
No.
Cyberpunk is a postmodern science fiction genre noted for its focus on high tech and low life. It features advanced science such as information technology and cybernetics, coupled with the degree of breakdown or radical change in the social order.
Damn, I think one of the movies that I said wasn't totally is.
Which one did you say wasn't?
Fifth Element.
Yeah, I was going to debate you guys that it was.
I don't think Fifth Element is...
By that definition, I can see it. So what are some prime examples of cyberpunk that we have out there?
Blade Runner is one of the classic examples.
Very classic.
The new Tron. That is really...
Tron
says cyberpunk to me.
There's a particular story arc in Cloud Atlas that I believe is could be classified as cyberpunk.
The new Dread is actually quite cyberpunk, even though it seems to be a little low-tech.
See, I haven't seen it.
Oh, I have it over there. You should watch it.
Total Recall,
definitely.
That one, for sure.
Aeon Flux.
I don't know about the new one.
By the way, the old one, not the new one.
Yeah,
the Matrix?
Fuck you. The Matrix 1 is cyberpunk. Once you get away from that, especially the third, then it's less cyberpunk.
Tell us why.
I'll tell you. I'll argue this later.
No, right now.
Okay.
I think humping in the cave had something to do with
Matrix.
What, they needed implants to make it cyberpunk?
Okay.
Yep.
Your first movie, lots of cyberpunk elements. You have a guy whose his day job is literally just a pencil pusher. And
you're essentially living in a quote-unquote internet.
Right. So the dystopia is he's combating this entire... basically the entire existence, which is run by someone completely out of his control.
Not just one large corporation, but all of it.
But all of everything. Yeah. So he comes out of it, and then it emphasizes all the technology and his interactions. And then the second one still kind of plays with that. I mean, there's elements to it that are shit, like the ghosts, the vampires, and the werewolves. But...
Go on.
The fight in the mansion, those are ghosts, or those are werewolves and vampires. The twins were the ghosts.
Yeah, I know the twins were the ghosts.
But everyone else in there are vampires and werewolves. They don't actually do anything with it, but they're mentioned to be that, because the entire house is a collection of these quote-unquote glitches in the system that are pseudo-agents.
It's been so long since I watched this.
I know. Right?
I know. But
I remember the twins, because I liked their dreadlocked hair.
The albino.
And then the third one is pretty much just post-apocalyptic, because really not a lot happens in the Matrix. It's a lot more of, oh god, they're drilling inside! So, oh god, we're going to have giant robots!
What you're saying is that Earth is not cyberpunk, but the Matrix is.
Yes.
Okay.
And even the Earth itself is still, because it's still that low class, people fighting against, quote-unquote, the man, only it's the machine. That's why Terminator is also... viewed as cyberpunk. I'm having more issues seeing that aspect of it.
Terminator 4 could be.
Yeah, just because it's got more of a mechanical element in it, and the Faceless Corporation, mm-hmm. it makes more of a statement instead of just sending off that machine after your
See,
ass.
This is the issue with trying to dissect genres and categorize things as genres, is because everything does not... You can't fit... There's squares going into round holes.
Well, actually, I think one of the easiest things I've ever learned with the genres and identifying them as such is if you take that element out... I'm sure this is something you've both brought, all three of you actually probably brought up in the past, is if you take that element out, it is no longer that type of a story. So mm-hmm. if you take my nature punk story and you take the nature element out of it, there's nothing left of that story.
Okay. It's Pirates of the Caribbean.
It's Pirates of the Caribbean with a better ending.
For example, then, if you take Terminator and take out the cyberpunk part, which would be he's an android and from the future?
The future war. And see, that's the problem, is Terminator's not the best example of this.
No. Okay, Tron. Take out the cyber element of Tron.
Help me finish this then. Then what do you have if you take out that? Then you just
have a slasher fic with some creepy dude chasing this chick all the way.
Some giant mercenary that just can't be shot down chasing after her.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah, Friday the 13th, or, you know, the Expendables. Or,
or, you know, Die Hard. Or...
Like a pulp something or other, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
But meanwhile, if you take the Matrix out of the Matrix, you have...
No story.
You don't have a movie title.
Right. Yeah. The thing, the general elements that are in cyberpunk is, as it says, the technology. So a lot of this from the early books that formed the genre, like Neuromancer and whatnot, is, and which is captured greatly in Shadowrun, the RPG.
That was actually another example I had to bring up.
Yeah, is...
I apparently have to read the entire rule book for 4th edition 20th anniversary before this weekend.
Lovely.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
But there are... Okay, you know how in Shadowrun... Basically, you always have the, here's the people running around doing magic and technology and all that. And then you have the whole hacking element where it's like there's in-depth rules of this is what happens when you hack into the internet. And there's the black ice and all these other weird things that can attack you and their viruses and their AIs. That's more cyberpunk than the rest of it.
Well, yeah, because magic isn't really cyberpunk.
No, that's just the fantasy element of Shadowrun.
Magic is cyberpunk, but usually it's more fantasy element in cyberpunk or vice
versa. Cyberpunk... Yeah. There is that element where you have the real world, and then there's also, because technology has advanced so far, you have a greater reliance on all this technology that's going on, where a person could be a much, almost like we're getting to be today, where you have a person who's this low life who can literally hack into the computer and do anything he wants. He becomes God because he has the skills to do it.
Does cyberpunk, specifically the technology, have to be computerized?
I think that's the element of cyberpunk in that regard.
So, that would be my guess.
If you did not have the computer, say, almost like a future steampunk world, would that be cyberpunk? Or would you call that futuristic steampunk? Say,
I think I would classify that as like as steampunk.
If you took out the Matrix out of Matrix and watched the last two movies, you're basically having the robots fight the humans. And there's not a lot of... computers, but there is. But do you understand what I'm going? It's mostly like robots and machines.
But that's also,
then that's more sci-fi.
Well, that also falls into what he was saying earlier, how the first movie was cyberpunk and the other two weren't so much.
But then what is that? You're saying it's sci-fi?
I would say it's more sci-fi, post-apocalyptic.
So what's the difference between sci-fi and cyberpunk?
And therein lies the problem, is...
It's a classification of...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are the elements of one but not the other?
It's a theme. It's like noir in mystery. Whereas in one, noir is part of mystery. It's a specific
subgenre
that works perfectly. Because you have, say, sci-fi, and people can't see me gesturing, and then you have the branch that comes off to cyberpunk, mm-hmm. which then has its little branch off to steampunk. Because steampunk is a subgenre of cyberpunk. Because what steampunk
I think what I actually see is you've took a Venn diagram of sci-fi. Yeah. And steampunk, and cross them in the middle.
Well, I'm not sure that steampunk would be like a subgenre.
Well, I'm saying steampunk.
Okay, hold on. I actually have the explanation for this.
Okay.
Cyberpunk is all about the micronization of technology. You have laptops that fit on your arms. You have microtechnology. You have nanobots. Steampunk is about the macronization of technology. Everything they have, and this is actually one of the definitions used in steampunk. Okay. It's actually taking things and making them
bigger,
larger, making them not shinier, making them grittier and dirtier, and
but then you're going to Diesel Punk, because
Diesel Punk is
bigger, grittier, dirtier.
The way that I've seen it is, if you took the two,
actually,
Cyberpunk,
Diesel Punk is shiny.
If you take a motherboard and you look at it, you have no freaking clue what those circuits are doing unless you're a computer engineer.
Yeah.
If you look at a steampunk mechanism, even with basic rudimentary knowledge, you should be able to go, well, that steam's pushing that lever, that turns
it's
the cycle spark.
It's all a combustion
engine. Yeah, you're able to look at it and understand.
Yeah.
So in the sense, I can see that being the same, but I don't see it necessarily being bigger.
Just on the other end of that is that what I see Cyberpunk as is that it is an amalgamation of all of these high-tech computers and instruments and electronic devices, and steampunk is really none of that. Like, it's technically sort of like a macro circuit board, but not really.
Yeah,
circuit boards don't run on water.
Like, in steampunk, it just seems like if you replace normal day, set us back maybe Victorian if you really want to get to that, and just took, you know, you're replacing electricity with the steam engine, and steam becomes the power. And so you don't really change as much as the world you live in as much as you're changing the devices you use. Meanwhile, in cyberpunk, most of the time I'm seeing is that the cybernetics, the electronics, have not just evolved. They are everything.
They are the people.
Like, everything. The walls are just giant ads. And everything has a computer in it. Everything is...
Everyone has a computer in that regard,
unfortunately, it goes back into the how much of that genre you're sticking into your thing. Because you have variances of steampunk where you have this, where it's a small amount here and there to... Everything from your luggage to your hat is steam powered and has some kind of weird gear element to it. Same thing goes with cyberpunk, because you have small elements to, like, Blade Runner, where it is that whole, like, and that's the one, that's the aspect of it that, thank you, both of you, that's the aspect of it that I prefer as opposed to toning it down, because the more you tone it down in both those genres, the more it becomes fantasy or science fiction.
The less it becomes a cyberpunk.
Right.
It depends how full you want it.
And that's why I prefer, say, Blade Runner to Terminator. Is because in Blade Runner, you look at the... For those that don't know, and if I do get this wrong, you can correct me. Neuromancer is one of the premier novels of cyberpunk. It was actually written after the guy watched the first 5 or 15 minutes of Blade Runner. And just the whole setup of the environment inspired him to write this entire series of books. And I don't know how well your guys' memories work in the beginning of Blade Runner. It is such a beautiful setup where you have the flying car and you have the city.
I really gotta watch this.
And all the ads and everything. And it's just...
I just watched it last month.
It's so beautiful and it's so filled with everything. Much like when I sent Ocean the trailer he's already seen for...
Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, if you have
27, that's right.
If you want a good definition of the genre, watch this trailer.
Or for other video games, Deus Ex, especially the Human Revolution. Both of those are really well done versions of cyberpunk world. Like he's augmented himself and stuff like that.
So, just using the augmentation as an example for cyberpunk, we were talking earlier about how Fifth Element on the classification falls under as a cyberpunk movie, but watching it, I never would have got that from that. Watching that is just straight science fiction to me. I don't see a cyberpunk quality to any of, you know, how that could classify as a cyberpunk.
There's the dystopian part, like you look at his apartment and that.
Not so much.
The way everything is compactized into everything. Like I agree with you. This is where I sometimes wonder, like, what part is cyberpunk, what part is sci-fi, and what part is just, this could be us in the future.
Because that just looks like us in the future, period, because of the whole, well, look at the new apartment buildings that are being built. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not building, you know, normal houses anymore. It's always duplexes, condos, apartment buildings.
But we don't have flying taxis.
depends on how good your cab driver is. But you know what I mean? That's just us in the future. I don't really see a cyberpunk aspect to it, just a futuristic science fiction.
The amount of electronics, though, used
in... We've got tons of electronics right now.
I know, and that's why I wonder how much of cyberpunk is just what we're going towards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we already have amazing computers that sit in our pockets.
Stupid Geordi
that
riser.
We call phones, but you barely ever use them as such, right?
look at pictures of kittens and get them.
We already have people who are already becoming cyborgs. Like there's one of
the... Oh, the heart implants, the ear implants, the eye implants, the vocal cord implants.
I forget who.
Ed Roland Speed.
Sorry,
yes, but I want to finish my point. there's one doctor. I think he's in England. I might be wrong. Who's actually one of the forefronts for cybernetics, and he has an implant that's in his arm that he uses as his pass to get into his office. It controls his house. He even had one implanted in his wife's arm, and when they do it together, they can feel each other's hands.
Creepy.
Yeah, really cool. And there's even people that are there's the low-tech cybernetics where you'll put an earth magnet into your finger, and now you can feel electromagnetic.
That would just fuck me right up.
They call it the sixth sense.
Ugh.
Anyway, suppose you brought it back to Sixth Sense, so my point is suddenly relevant, but, no, I was just trying to make the point that the Sixth Sense, if you're looking at it from a storyline point of view, I really don't think it's cyberpunk. If you're looking at the world, then yes.
So, but what is a cyberpunk storyline?
Well, the fact that you really can take out most of the technology, most of the world of flying cars and whatever the fuck, and it's still the same story.
But what about her?
I don't know, is that really technology? She just seems to be like this void between
advanced genetics.
I think it's a more in this case the plot, because there's certain plot points that a lot of cyberpunk stories hit on. And especially the dystopia of everything, that seems to be the thing that holds it together. The same thing goes for a lot of steampunk stories. There's a lot of knockoffs where it's like, look, I threw gears and steam at things, and it's a romance story of the vampires, but there just happens to be steam stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the dystopia for Victoria ages for steampunk is the women fighting for their rights, mm-hmm. and you have adventurers and
Well, that's the punk part, right?
Yeah, but that's the punk part.
That's true, but that's also part of it.
Getting back to Fifth Element, I don't see how the storyline could be cyberpunk. I mean, the storyline is a giant planetoid that's sentient. That's not cyberpunk.
Isn't he kind of rebelling against people and trying to force himself onto airships and running away from the police and all that?
No, he just wants to blow up the world.
He does?
No, the big planetoid. No, the guy, though.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis is just your typical Bruce Willis character.
Yes, that's the point.
But he's rebelling. But he's plot, not doing.
He's
not so much.
It's a dystopia that he's battling against the man. Even though the man is trying to save the world, he's just wanting to do his thing. He is just a guy who just happens to have this skill set that's perfect for it. He doesn't want to do it. He wants nothing to do with it.
Until a pair of tits get
involved.
So, how much does dystopian have to be part of it?
I think it probably has to be a significant part of it.
I never really realized it was part of the definition.
It was actually part of the Wikipedia definition?
Well, high technology, low life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Which seems to imply that all of this cybernetic stories, the cyberpunks, involve these like dystopian futures or like people in poverty or like post-world destruction, like.
So if you took the fantasy element out of Star Wars, or is that just still cyberpunk?
Star Wars isn't much of a punk anything, is it?
No, but there's still tech and dystopian. People are shitty lives and that.
Yeah, certainly. High tech, low life. Wait, so does that mean Star Wars is going to be cyberpunk?
But, no, I hope not. Oh dear, Disney, do not do that.
No, because
This is why I ask these questions, is because
you like to infuriate us.
I mean, I until like to bring about debate
no,
and discussion.
I'm just trying to figure out now
and not
why
fit
it's
everything
not
into
cyberpunk.
A nice little box.
Well,
sorry.
But looking at all the definitions because that we've just given, that would make Star Wars cyberpunk.
But a lot of what makes cyberpunk is the
grittiness,
sort of the impact it has on people's lives and how it couldn't be any other way, unless these things happen. So you've got the Matrix, where these people can't normally interact without their world. You've got, you know, people with the cybernetic implants that completely changes their way of life.
And then they begin questioning humanity.
It does happen this way in Star Wars, but it's a lot more in our own personal world. Like, you've got Like, the pod racers are like NASCAR. You drive between planets like they're cities. Like, it doesn't actually change the things that they do. They just have spaceships instead of cars.
Cyberpunk is as if Roland and I wrote sci-fi. Star Wars as if you two wrote sci-fi.
What? You're saying I can't write cyberpunk?
What? Excuse me?
No.
So I'm gonna, it's time to turn off this mic.
Because because at the end of a cyberpunk story, very rarely is it ever a happy ending.
I know where he's going.
Because yeah. Look at the end. I can't remember the end of Blade Runner, believe it or not. But look at the end of...
Blade Runner ended on an okay note. Actually...
Fifth Element ended on a happy note.
Not really. They saved the world and...
He gets the girl, they saved
Blade
the world.
Blade Runner was a bittersweet. Kind of,
but his life isn't any better.
Sure it is. The only thing he was moaning about the whole time was his ex.
Well, no, he still lived in the apartment and all that.
It's okay if you lead a shitty life, so long as you have love.
That was Blade Runner, I think.
That's the moral Hollywood wants to.
That's the moral Hollywood's been shoving down our throats for years.
But that's the thing, is that, like...
Are there much dystopian stories that end on a happy note?
Probably not, but I think that's one of the...
It's just either life got slightly better?
It's part of that whole nitty-grittiness of it, because that's...
Actually, yeah, I guess you're right, because with Fifth Element, nothing changed. It was just... It kind of went back to...
She's not being hunted anymore.
Well, yeah, no, the world was as it is. The big planetoid was coming to destroy it. They stopped the planetoid. The big baddie's done. Nothing has changed in the world.
Bruce Willis still lives in his apartment. Everyone wants to congratulate him as being a hero. He still wants nothing to do with it because he has a sexy alien girl to have sex with.
And he still has creepers in his hallway.
And if your world is properly dystopian, you can't just fix it in a single, like, story arc.
No, they usually leave it on the cliffhanger. It's like, we found the answer.
Anyway,
and that's it.
If we're going to talk about a movie, let's make it something that's not Fifth Element.
Well, no one else is coming up with anything. Except
we've
for Blade
mentioned,
Runner.
We've mentioned other
Star
movies.
Star Wars and Blade Runner.
Matrix.
And Matrix.
And...
Yeah, that's three whole other movies to talk about.
Yes.
Aeon Flux. Just...
Tron. Okay,
Aeon
Flux.
Yeah, Tron was a good one.
Aeon Flux is totally cyberpunk.
I was trying to think of anything, and no specific examples come to mind for me.
Well, with Tron, nothing changes, right? He's still, you know, the son of a missing person.
He has the
girl
now.
Yeah, but that's all it. You know, life got a little better because he had
to found out about his dad. Tron's
Who's
back.
Who's gone now?
Sorry if I'm spoiling everything. It wasn't that good.
But no, you're right. I mean,
Daft Punk was the best.
You're right. That was pretty awesome.
I actually think things got a lot better for him in the front, and I'm kind of looking forward to the next movie to see what they're going to do with it.
But... Like, he used to just be some punk-ass kid stealing from his own company.
Now
and
he
he's
is
like,
still a punk-ass kid stealing
from
his own company,
if you actually want a better cyberpunk dystopian Tron, watch the new Tron cartoon. Way, way better.
Was it a cartoon?
Yeah. They did a cartoon. It's on Netflix. Sweet. Go watch it. It's fantastic.
American Netflix?
I think it's on Canadian too.
Okay.
But basically, this one little group, this town, they're just all unhappy. And then the overlord red guys come in. They're like, yep, this is now our new military base. Fuck y'all. And so the one kid's like, we can't do this. He finds Ultron. He becomes Neutron. And now he's fighting against the establishment that has taken over his town, and everyone's looking at him to be, are you a rebel? Are you on my side? Are you against us?
Are you a hero or are you a punk?
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's keeping it secret, but at the same time, he, like, steals his friend's bike, and now his friend's like, I hate Tron. Maybe I'll build weapons for the bad guy and that, but much more, you know, it actually has more story and plot, but it's a cartoon.
Elysium.
Looks interesting. With shaky cam!
It was a movie about socialism and healthcare, and that's about all I got.
But you have high-tech, low-life, until Elysium gets to Elysium. It's about fighting...
But was it very cybernetic, or was it just kind of sci-fi future? Because that's
very
kind of...
cybernetic, because really he cybernetic. Gets that exoskeleton wired to his bones.
So does Wolverine.
No, because it's a giant thing that attaches to his back. It's basically... Like
but isn't one of the point of the whole movie Elysium
so like
is he goes up to overthrow the imbalance?
No, he goes up there to save his life.
Well, and someone else's, but he tries to overthrow the balance. Isn't that like an ending of the dystopian?
But still, nothing gets better because Earth is still a shithole.
True.
They just sort of fuck up the rest of the process.
yes.
It's kind of like 2012, where like the family of four kills or almost kills, I don't remember, like 6 million people.
Yes.
But it's okay because they made survived. It.
Yes.
It is okay.
Yeah, you screwed up the gears and all these people are dying now, but hey, you made it.
And what about some superhero storylines? Because well, there are some superheroes, notably like Cybernetic.
In the DC, who is a cyborg, but the world they live in, I wouldn't call cyborg.
How about Freakazoid?
I've known
Freakazoid is an amalgamation of the internet 10 years before it comes about.
Yeah, but he is like this essentially computer-generated person who does all this crazy shit.
Huh.
Apparently Swordfish is a cyberpunk?
What?
I don't know.
Let me get my 5 gigabyte hard drive.
I'll get my 9 screens. Equilibrium, you guys have to see. Have you seen Equilibrium?
Hackers, would that be? I don't remember that movie much.
Maybe. Well, okay, Hackers, though, dealt in the present, even if the hacking was completely bonkers.
Now, can you have a cyberpunk in a present world? That seems like it would make sense.
That's another question.
I personally would say no. I think by the very nature of cyberpunk,
it wouldn't
just because our technology.
If you've done it right, you shouldn't be able to tell it's the present.
But it's almost just like an alternate reality. You can have something take place in 2013 and have it as a cybernetic world, like a cyberpunk world, without it needing to be in the future.
What happened earlier in time to make it a cybernetic world now that isn't already happening now that would happen in the next 30, 50 years?
Most storylines that do something like that usually have the elimination of Christianity in the Dark Ages.
I'm not going to debate history on that.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, the storylines I've seen where they create, you know, the early 2000s.
We took out religion so that people would start thinking scientifically.
Yeah, you know, there was less witch hunts, there was less killing because you were scared of your neighbor.
No. It's mostly the destruction of the Dark Ages because the Dark Ages lost a lot of technology that had previously come about.
Have you seen Equilibrium?
You just said that.
I missed it. You guys should see Equilibrium.
Make it happen.
Avatar is apparently one.
Avatar?
I can see aspects of it, but yeah, I agree with Roland. It's a handshaky eh.
Babylon AD.
Because like the only cyberpunk part of that is the fact where they have
this is a totally different Avatar.
The Airbender.
No, it's neither of those.
The Airbender sure
is some other movie named Avatar from 2004.
That Avatar apparently... Last Airbender sure as hell is in cyber.
Imagine if he was, though.
That would be...
Is it metal an element, technically?
Yeah. That would be different. They do create
the metal bender.
They do create metal bending.
That'd be freaking cool.
No.
Ghost in the Shell? Ghost in the Shell.
Totally.
Ghost in the Shell is by far probably one of the best examples of it.
What about Akira?
No.
I would say yeah. I would give you a care.
High technology, low life, dystopia. Nothing ends happy!
Although the basis of the plot turns out to be something biological, the setting, I would say, would definitely...
The setting, I'll agree.
Akira's on the list.
The setting?
Take that.
Tetsuo!
Scott Pilgrim?
What?
No.
No.
Scott Pilgrim is a video game world.
I know. The problem I kind of have with movies like Akira being classified as cyberpunk... is that
the biological element?
Sure, like you've got the three little kids that are like super heightened senses, psychic, whatever. You've got Akira, who I don't remember what happens to him, but he's morphing into a gigantic monster. But then all the rest, like, it is dystopian, but all the rest of it is just bikes, cars, and regular shit.
Have you seen that bike? Bike is tripped out.
The bikes are awesome.
When was it written, though?
You
1990 something?
I have 89?
I'm just tossing it out there, but what if the electronic age that they're depicting in 1988, sure it seems blasé to us now, but 1988 maybe it was...
You'll notice the same thing with older sci-fi, is that they'll be able to predict like space and other things, but they're not able to predict computers.
No.
Computers... came out of nowhere. Well, it was usually sci-fi is they've actually noticed that sci-fi is actually a good predictor of the future.
Well, look at Star Trek. I mean, you know, like I remember
Anthony
as a kid,
C. Clarke predicted the moon landing.
Yeah,
and we were supposed to be on Mars and Jupiter by now.
But I remember as a kid, you remember going to the store and you had to open the door and you'd always pretend that we'd be like Star Trek and the door would open for yourself.
Who doesn't walk up to the door and You know, I have the force power.
No, it's Star Trek, you dummy, not Star Wars. Oh. But, like, now you go up to a door and most people get affronted if the door doesn't open automatically. Like, that wasn't more around
when we were
kids. And cell phones,
the whole...
And cell phones, the flip phones, the tricorders. The talking from your, video chats.
Monitors on the side of med bays.
Yeah, you know, like, we had none of this back when we were kids. It was pure science fiction. Well, and it's a good predictor.
Look at the original Star Trek to just the Next Generation and look, because there was about a 30-year gap at how much technology changed. So when they did the show again...
They revamped a whole bunch of
everything
stuff.
Everything revamped, yeah.
Actually, like the communicators, you know, they used to have the little giant cereal box looking things, and now they just poke themselves in the chest. Which they actually have those for Bluetooth now, might I add.
Do you guys watch Dollhouse?
I watched a bit of it.
Apparently it's cyberpunk.
I could see that just because they use a lot of a technological element to make her into the other people. Into the other role she needs to play. But other than that...
Final Fantasy VII.
I could see that.
I don't know.
I mean, there's still the magical aspect of it. And I would...
Shadowrun has magic.
I know. That's the other thing, though, is it's...
It's been so long since I've seen Final Fantasy, I don't know if I could properly...
Yeah, Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. Has anyone else seen Cloud Atlas?
No, I'm afraid not.
The guy freaking has a gun on his arm.
Yeah, because... There's the one story arc of that movie where you've got everything set, it's in like a far futuristic world, and you have these servants. They are all exactly the same. So you've got the people serving around these restaurants, and then it's, you know, everything is super high up in the air. Like, you've got...
Do you know which waiter was yours?
Gunfights taking place, like, 3,000 feet above the ground. The one, like, special sort of clone person who's being... rescued and just highly futuristic but very dystopian for a certain race of people, which are these servants. So, like, just as another example of what I would consider cyberpunk, even though it's not directly related to, like, integrated technology.
Like, the visual aspects of a technological...
It's a much more implied meaning. Like, it's... You've got technology... which is changing the lives of other people because you're creating this race of slaves.
Do you guys remember the name of that movie that you worked for minutes on your life?
In Time.
Would that have counted as a cyberpunk just because of the technology, you know?
It's a very broad stroke of a cyberpunk element.
Yeah, it has one element. The rest is kind of plain day.
It's based entirely around this concept of buying time, and that's it. The world is still exactly the same.
So in the end, now that we've listed all these other examples...
I've seen two camps.
I'm starting to two.
Yeah.
Mine are probably different than yours, but if you look at the prime examples that we've given for cyberpunk, things like Blade Runner and... Blade Runner, it's the movies with that kind of visual appeal. Mm-hmm. That's classically what's viewed as cyberpunk, is everything that basically, if it
neon
looks,
lights, wall ads everywhere,
people
have cybernetics up the wazoo.
Every culture walking through, you stop for your udon noodles at some side cart where some creepy cybernetic Asian dude is...
Batman Beyond.
Oh, yeah. I love Batman Beyond.
Batman Beyond.
That's a good example, actually.
Shway. Anyways, sorry. Continue saying.
But I was going to say, the two examples I'm seeing is you have the...
Hardcore,
nitty-gritty Blade Runner type, where it's dirty, it's gritty, it's it's violent and all. And then you have the more shined-up version, which is things like... Cloud Atlas.
Aeon Flux.
Where it doesn't have the nitty-gritty. It has a lot of the technology and a lot of the same elements, but because it doesn't have that nitty-gritty, you would never compare them.
Well, I'm seeing is almost an internal versus external. In Blade Runner and that, the technology is in your face. It's blatant.
So
it's almost clamped onto arms.
That's the dichotomy I'm seeing.
Well, versus the other two, like an Aeon Flux, if you just look at, like, concept art, everything would just look like some sort of futuristic or just a concept city almost.
Yeah.
It's not until you see when people interact with it do you see the cybernetic elements.
Okay, so the external is the nitty-gritty in your face and the internal element is the more subtle.
Yeah.
Shiny.
At the same time,
I could buy that, actually. I could buy that. That
would be the better comparison between things like Cloud Atlas, where it's purely like it's not obvious. Like that it could be a cyberpunk element.
Is Cloud Atlas dystopian in any way? Like it sounds like people running away from stuff.
There's four story arcs. This particular one is like dystopian. She's fighting for her people. There are some others. There's one that takes like further into the future where they've essentially devolved back to cavemen, and you've got the super advanced people, but they're not in like any sort of poverty. It's just them going back to the wild and these people having their own lives sort of right above them.
I'm just going to toss it out there. Feel free to cut it later, but I'm just thinking, so there could be two distinct types of cyberpunk. One of them is, as you know, Tarl and you have stated, you know, the nitty-gritty external. That would kind of be like focusing on what has made the world it is at that point in time. So you could see the wall ads and the flying cars and all that stuff. So that would make it the what it is. Whereas the more subtle type would be more focusing on the society after everything has been done. So it's kind of, this is focusing on the what and this is focusing on the when.
My bad thing is, one's if Microsoft made it, the tech, and one is if the Apple made the tech.
Kinda.
I'm kind of viewing it, if to use another example, I'm kind of thinking it along the lines of, say, steampunk, where we were talking about where it's very much in your face, where
bigger.
There's no movie as a prime example of this because they don't make
steampunk
movies, but yeah, but where like it's everywhere. It's
for the counter example, I would say like Wild Wild West is a more integrated
where
one,
yes, but whereas in the counter one where it's a more of a it's a lesser element but it's more refined, like Wild Wild West, the TV series, or the movie itself.
And Howl's Moving Castle is a cartoon. It's got old steampunk elements in it. It's a lot.
Yes, yes, it does. But for the more of like the in-your-face thing, you have to actually turn to literature to see it, because that's the only place where you're walking down the street and there's there's clockwork and steam things everywhere. There's ash falling from the sky because they've just polluted so heavily. And things like that. I mean, if any movie studio ever ends up doing it, it's going to be an arm and a leg special effects noise.
Ooh.
Yes.
That would be cyberpunk.
Remember Nine?
I do. I
would
mostly
call that steam.
It's
that
steampunk.
I mostly
even elements of alchemy
on the
in it.
Television displays
job
I used to work at.
That would be a fully immersed.
With ash from the sky and all the
they have literally polluted the world.
Okay, so we have Nine is the hardcore, and we have
something
Wild,
like Wild
Wild
West,
Wild
West.
Or try to think of.
But the other way that I thought is there again, like we've commented, you can have the world, and then you can have the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with having a cyberpunk setting.
If you want to truly succeed, I think in cyberpunk you have to use both elements. You can't just use one.
I don't think that, like, a cyberpunk world makes a cyberpunk story.
It makes a hell of a good
like,
setting,
which is why I don't think things like Fifth Element would qualify.
Well, like, this is something where we... No. This is what I was about to say is that I still believe it's cyberpunk because of the cyberpunk world, but you do have to notice that there is a difference between the story and the setting. You can put a story in any setting and it's going to do different things.
Yeah.
So I think the point of advice in this is that you have to use both elements to make it succeed.
Well, it depends what your story wants.
I guess.
If you want it to be strictly cyberpunk, it's probably best if you're using both elements.
It sort of depends on the context of your story. If it's going to be like a short story with cyberpunk elements...
Like
just don't have time.
Isn't Cloud Atlas a prime example of changing settings for a similar narrative?
It's a visual medium, so they're able to do it much more effectively.
But it's each like it's five different stories.
You really have to watch it to understand. It's the stories can stand on their own, but the point of it is that they're all
intertwined. Well, you need to watch the five stories.
But the story which I refer to does stand on its own. It is entirely about this one girl and her plight to save her people, but...
Well, the other one I wanted to bring up
still
was
does a very good job
Heavy Metal.
Heavy Metal, I think, is more post-apocalyptic.
The first one with the cab driver, I find very cyberpunk.
Like, are you
yes.
talking about the whole movie itself
no,
just the shorts?
No, just the one scene. Okay. Like the one with the guy in the bomber, that's not really
no,
cyberpunk
the,
at all.
But no, you are absolutely correct. The car, the cab driver, that...
That's one of the first images that always pops in my
that,
mind when I think about that.
I can easily...
The third
dude,
gas
that robot
pedal.
Gave me freaking nightmares as a kid, man. Oh my God.
But that I can see as being cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. That's actually... That's got your setting. I mean, it's not... outright, it's still got a whole bunch of sci-fi elements to it.
Yeah,
I think that's the other thing too, is that a lot of cyberpunk doesn't have aliens in it.
No, that's well, yeah.
I mean, in this case, it does.
Well, that's a good difference between sci-fi and cyberpunk. Is usually cyberpunk isn't going into space.
Touche.
Well, one thing that is kind of funnily cyberpunk, I would think, would be Astar the robot from Planet Danger.
What?
What's this?
Do you ever remember as a kid? There is that one short where you've got
oh
the
my
robot
God.
Jumping
oh,
through all
yes.
of the gears.
I can put my
everything.
Arm back
oh,
on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like,
yeah, I can put my limb
put my
back,
arm
on.
Back on. You can't, so play safe.
Oh
as
my
bad,
God,
okay.
yeah,
as bad, that actually works. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
Would Astro and Mega
Shit.
Man be considered cyberpunk?
Oh, now that's in my head.
I realize most of this show is just us deciding if things are
cyberpunk. I never saw all that much about... Well,
I would say
sort of,
Mega Man was grittier.
But,
to be serious, Mega Man is gritty if you actually
hear
the story going on.
If you consider the fact that the world is constantly under siege by evil robots...
yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I could see Mega Man being cyberpunk. I would imagine Astro is. I never saw much of it.
Yeah, neither did I.
It was Robot Boy, but it was more nowadays.
Didn't they just do a new movie on that?
I've heard it's really good.
Quote-unquote.
Yeah, new, like 5 years
so,
ago.
Yeah. So bringing us back to cyberpunk, as Roland did say, this
so,
is pretty much us deciding what is and isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
you could have the gritty, you could not have the gritty.
Mm-hmm. It depends
the
on
technology.
What the elements your story requires.
Exactly.
And us deciding what makes a cyberpunk world is ultimately defining the features which we think it has.
By no means limiting your own decisions.
Yeah. And by no means we are defining cyberpunk, because
heck no.
This is just what we're discussing
well,
and observing
it's
on our own.
The fact that we can't define cyberpunk is what's making this entire situation.
I don't think you can specifically define a genre.
Well,
and the thing is I think as people listen to this, they can pretty much start defining each and every one of our own personal views of what cyberpunk is.
It'd probably help them define their own as well. So.
And that's part of it, is that they will have to find their own.
Anyone that has tried to define every single type of rock music will understand where we're coming from. Because you can't.
If people listen to this and they hear like, oh, I never realized that about the genre, then I'm happy with that.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm game with that.
I really like reggae dubstep.
That's an
I think
you
should leave now.
I had a guy say that on the bus, and I was like, what?
This is a Skrillex house.
Skrillex, the sound of cyberpunk.
Throw a bunch of pots and pans down the stairs. Skrillex is suing me now.
So yeah, yeah.
I think that's that in a nutshell.
Well, we've talked a lot about visual style and like things like even Final Fantasy VII. How do you help integrate that into a word-based narrative?
A lot of description.
Yeah.
Because we're all
a
our
lot
examples,
of world
with,
building.
With the exception of Neuromancer and Shadowrun, which even still Shadowrun, are all visual style.
How the opening to, as I was, we were talking earlier before we started recording, the opening to Do Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep, mm-hmm. His first two chapters are all about this one guy waking up, he's about to go to work, he's talking to his wife, she's being a bitch, and the entire conversation is all about these pill dispensers that can affect their mood pretty much instantaneously, and them talking about it, then him going up to the roof to fake feed his electronic sheep because it's a status symbol for them to have an animal on the roof of this apartment building, which is half empty because most of the people have left Earth for space, and everyone who's left on Earth is basically waiting for their card to come up saying that they can no longer reproduce and thus are abnormal and thus are essentially wiped off being considered human. Wait. Even though they're just normal, average people, because they're genetically flawed now because of radiation from the fallout from the mankind wrecking, or sorry, World War Terminus. And it's two, like in these two chapters, he has built such an in-depth world with just very small elements that he's gone into huge lengths about. But I think that's part of building a proper cyberpunk world, is you have to give your setting almost as much, if not more, than your characters, just to give that feel of where the technology's at, what level of griminess is it? Is it grimy? Is it everything smooth and perfect? You could, as we've said, do cyberpunk where everything's plastic machines.
Would Wally be cyberpunk or post-apocalyptic?
Post-apocalyptic sci-fi.
Robot love story.
Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
I don't think Wally is much of cyberpunk. No. There's nothing that really happens. The entire thing is either Wally on the world picking up garbage,
or Wally in space picking up chicks.
Or yeah, Wally in space.
See those
and
curves on
this plant that somehow fixes everything.
Okay.
Yeah, I just consider it at most a sci-fi because it's just, well, we're gonna hope to have space flight, so
let's hope it's more positive situation.
So hopefully we're not all fat. Yeah.
But
and hopefully the factivists won't come after us.
We accept you for all your sizes.
Health at every size.
I guess in the end, as we've all stated, cyberpunk is sci-fi. I don't see how you can do it any other way.
I don't think that was ever in question.
No, it was just it was set off right at the beginning.
But there's just certain themes that are. Yeah. I get there's certain themes in it that are common amongst all cyberpunk stories.
I think the more tech you increase in your sci-fi makes it more closer to cyberpunk. But you don't necessarily.
I think there's a line, though. You can cross over to where it's just sci-fi.
The main difference between something like sci-fi and cyberpunk is the implementation of it all. The fact that this does have to directly impact what people do as a species or like a race versus technology sort of doing its thing like it does now.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, the whole world doesn't have to be completely immersed in the electronics. Like, I think
it
the New Dread.
Well, just
have you seen the New Dread? Because I know they haven't.
New Drake?
Dread.
Dread.
Dread, no.
Ah, okay, so the New Dread. Like, there is technology that's advanced in the world, and it's around, but most of the people are living in shitty slums, so of course they're not going to have access to this. But there's definitely dystopian, there's definitely computers in there, but it's not a huge techie, it's more a few elements of cyberpunk. Now, does anyone have anything else to say?
Is there anything...
So, any advice to those writing cyberpunk, or...
Especially for the new RF anthology?
Exactly.
Yeah, specifically for that one.
Right, like me and Tarl? Yeah.
No happy endings, make a detailed and world build.
72%.
Don't forget to rip your reader's heart out.
Yeah, rip your reader's heart out, preferably as brutally as you possibly can. So
and
no
if their
happy
heart
endings.
Is made out of a computer PCU, even better.
Crash that PCU.
I think it's a matter of, if they want to write a good cyberpunk story, do your reading, do your movie watching.
Yeah, look up,
definitely see your staples like Neuromancer, like read or audiobook or whatever.
Go watch Blade Runner.
Yeah.
You guys all have to watch Equilibrium.
And apparently Avatar, but not...
This old Avatar no one has heard of.
Yeah, and Cloud Atlas. Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing, is I think it's just a matter of you have to know, much like writing any genre...
World building's a must.
Go into it. Do your research, get in the mood before you write so that you have all these genres. I mean, that's my technique, is I'll sit there and I'll read a bunch of cyberpunk stuff or I'll watch a bunch of cyberpunk stuff before writing it, just so I'm so immersed in it by the time I get to it that I can sit down and I've already got the ideas in my head. I've already started having dreams about it.
And if you find yourself having trouble trying to visualize what a cyberpunk world might be, just imagine everyone in the world has Google Glass.
Oh, man. That's
pretty much it.
It's like coming out next month, isn't it?
Actually, there's a very good Doctor Who episode that reflects cyberpunk.
Actually, yeah, I would believe
it's
that.
It's the one where they go and it's like a super futuristic London and everyone's got the ear implants.
Ear?
And they're receiving all of their new... Like, they start walking around and there's the doctor, and I think it's Amy at the time, that they, everyone just stops as the information downloads into their brain, and then there's, like, uploading daily joke, and then everybody laughs at the same time.
That would be creepy.
Like, it's an amazing episode, I think, with, like, the return of the Cybermen.
That would be really surreal.
That's, like, the pill dispenser, where in this argument with their, she's like, I don't want to dial up a new pill. And the guy's like, why don't you dial up pill number 3? And she's like, I don't want to dial up the pill that makes you want to dial. If, you know, but that's with all the mood enhancing drugs, and that's where we're headed. And it's just that kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe this shit's happening. But I mean, the people in their world don't realize how shitty it is. Anyway.
Anyways.
But stuff
you
like
haven't
that.
Figured out what cyberpunk is by now.
Or where to find it.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think cyberpunk is.
I agree.
Send us email at all.
Yes, we like emails.
Fangs and fonts, that's F-O-N-T-S.
Yeah, this is probably why people have been sending us anything.
If you think our recordings are crappy and would like to encourage us to make them better.
You would like to email us and call us a bunch of upstarts.
Fangs, F-A-N-G-S, and A-N-D, fonts, F-O-N-T-S.
Again, if they're listening to the podcast, they should already know how it's spelled.
I would hope.
If they haven't found the podcast, that would be an issue. But thank you to those who have sent emails. Speaking of which, let's go through one now.
For the Peanut Gallery, whilst I'm writing in, if you had to pick one novel by a furry author that you think more people should give a chance that isn't written by Kyle Gold, what would you recommend? I will confess an ulterior motive. And that I am looking to increase the number of authors in my book collection, and I'm not sure where to start. Availability on ebook is a plus, as shipping to the land down under usually starts with brutal and goes all the way to ransom. Keep up the good work. Yours truly, your phone just shut off.
Nice.
So.
I'm just going to butcher everyone's name.
So
the quill thing, I'm guessing.
As far as what I've read recently, having, you know, only recently in the last year or two, having gotten into writing, someone who's writing that I've thoroughly enjoyed of the stories that I've read so far would be White Yodi. He does some very heart-wrenching and some very
A man
sweet,
after your own heart.
Yeah, some very sweet stories. One of which will be in Punk'd. So I would say check out White Yodi for sure. W-H-Y-T-E. Yodi.
Y-O-T-E.
For me, who have I enjoyed as of late? Who have I not enjoyed as of late?
An easier one.
Actually, one I actually enjoyed, if you can, Graveyard Greg. Yes, he does tend to write a lot of, hi, I'm a muscle fur, I can't walk with my arms put down.
As Roland
You can't
poses.
See me flexing, but I'm doing so admirably.
Yes, yes, he is.
In your lumberjack flannel.
He has an obsession in pretty much all of his stories of writing very buffed, very gay men. However, his storytelling is solid, and I have enjoyed a few of his works. The first of which I've read is Deathless, which I think is probably one of his better works. But yeah, Graveyard Greg.
To be fair, I've only really read short stories, so I haven't gotten into new novels.
I read what he has in the house, yeah. So it works
like,
for me.
White Yodi hasn't written any novels, as far as I know, to be fair.
He was looking for novels,
so. That's why I pop on FA.
And Graveyard Greg
FA
writes
or...
novellas.
Well,
so.
Yeah, that's why I pop on FA or Ink Bunny, and I'll read that stuff and whatever voice has in the house. That's what I read.
After going to RF and meeting some of the guys, I'm really interested in checking out some of the work. Like,
I'll second that, then, actually.
Another writer that I would love to see more of would actually be Zia McCorgi as well.
Yeah.
Hear that, Zia?
Yep. I'm pimping you.
And as
where's my money?
And if you want to read someone who writes something that I can't, slice of life, Ray Chan. He's one of the few people who can actually write slice of life really well. It's not for everyone, but he actually does a really good job of it.
And someone else that I'm a little more hesitant to add, just because she's already quite popular would be Mary Loud.
Yes. Actually, yeah, that was one I was going to suggest after reading her story.
But she has won Ursa Majors ever since Kyle stepped down. So, but definitely go check out her stuff. It is good. Mm-hmm. She's also in Punk'd, and her story is very enjoyable.
And she has ebooks on Smashwords, which is one of the things that EO is asking is for ebooks. Smashwords has her stuff on it, and a couple other free writers as well.
Also, there's now the Bad Dog Books for Planet's ebook site, so you can pick them up. I want to actually check out Alfor's stuff after meeting the guy talking with him at RF, and I've heard good stuff about his stuff, but I haven't actually read any of his, so I can't actually give a glowing review.
I've got Prince of Knaves.
Is it good?
I
haven't read it.
I
picked it up because I have a shit ton of Rabbit Valley stock sitting my room. So I picked it up because what the hey.
The types of stories he wrote or write are sounds like the stuff I'd be interested in.
I'm also currently going through Thousand Leaves.
M.C. Hogarth, I think is how you pronounce the last name. Also available on Smashwords, writes science fiction, writes furries as alien species genetically created by mankind. Recently finished reading Claws and Starships. One of the only furry writers who's ever actually made me tear up and get angry at a book. Really powerful stuff. Some of the shorter stories, they're still good. Some of them are okay, but their longer works are absolutely really, really stunning. But they're also available on Smashwords.
So hopefully that helps you out.
I mean, that was six artists we just listed?
Yeah.
And two sites.
I think you're good, buddy.
Aside from that, just take a look at what's on the Rabbit Valley, Fur Planet, or Sofa Wolf pages.
Or let us know what genre specifically you're looking for.
there's plenty of artists to go through.
Thanks again for the email. I think that's it for us.
Yep.
Everybody wants to book it and go to bed.
Yep. Thank God I did my writing on the friggin' bus. You can tell I was writing a sex scene because I nailed out 1,500 words.
That sounds so dirty. I'm just going to get off at the next stop. Get off at the next stop.
Oh, hey, honey, you're still here?
Oh.
Anyway, so once again...
Quick reading over my shoulder!
Thanks to all the all the writers that helped us record our last episode. It was great meeting you guys and seeing you all at RF.
Yep, thank you so much.
We loves you!
To anybody ready a story for the RF Cyberpunk Anthology next year, good luck. I think, that though there's no information up on it, you'll probably need your submissions done by February. Otherwise, please, send us your feedback. Let us know what topics you'd like to hear, any guests maybe you'd like us to have on the show. Any comments on things we've talked about in this episode or any others, please email us at podcast@fangsandfonts.com. Also, follow us on Twitter @fangsandfonts. Have a good night, guys. We'll catch you around next time.
No. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Cyberpunk, she would have a mute button.
Oh!
Oh!
Nice!
She would also have retractable blades.
The kid wouldn't be allowed to leave the proximity of the kitchen.
They said worse things! They said worse!
That's why I'm gonna go punch them too! It'd be different if, us three or four went in there. Sorry, I figured you would have other things to do.
You can hit him.
Like what?
I'm gonna go make some coffee.
I'm gonna go use the washroom.
Maybe there was a.
We're just gonna shut off this recording right here for evidence.
You might want to clean the chair off in the living room so you can sleep there tonight.
Yeah.